Welcome to the studio and Randy down in Glenwood at the Glenwood Post Independent.
Welcome to the Valley's top journalists. Maybe you just want to open with that.
Right?
There you go.
There we go.
Yeah. No matter where they are.
Yeah, that's right.
Welcome, top journalists.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to?
Oh, and
people
one
who aren't here right now.
And one columnist.
He's still a journal. Right? We take him. We accept him.
Yeah. I'm going to start down in Garfield County with the $10,000 signing bonuses for sheriff's deputies. So it's always hard to get good help. And I wish I was in the position to offer $10,000 signing bonuses.
Yeah.
Did that go through any sort of public hearing or county commissioner approve that?
It was part of the budget that the county commission approved on Monday. And they say it'll actually save money because this is for officers with 2 years' experience, so they will have already gone through the law enforcement academy and their various certifications, which does take time and money. The Glenwood Springs police chief, who is authorized to hire an extra officer and I think has two or three vacancies, has said one reason that the officer may not be on the street by next summer is because of the time it takes to train in addition to the time it takes to recruit. So this, we think, is unique in Colorado, but it really does seem to make some sense because you're going to be hiring people who know what they're getting into. They've already been law enforcement officers. They're already trained, and the bonus is spread over 2 years. So you get $5,000 right away, you get $3,000 after a year, and another $2,000 after 2 years.
Ah.
And, yeah, you know, retention. It helps with retention a little bit. Lou Valario, the sheriff here, told us that he is just perpetually short of officers, which is good for us because he's run a nice little business card size classified ad in the Post Independent every day for a few years.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's interesting. It's a different way to address the cost of living and the housing issues that we talk about so much.
Well, that kind of brings up a question. Would $10,000 make the difference? I mean, if you're talking about moving here from somewhere else and you know, starting a new career, is $10,000 really going to make – is it even going to be a decision point? And I guess that would make me wonder, are they wasting their money doing that?
Well, I think it's appealing to think you get $5,000 right at signing.
Well, it's really
I think
nice,
it depends
but
on where you are and, you know, whether this is a lifestyle that you want. So maybe you're in a smaller, less populous county. Maybe you're in a, you know, maybe you work in western Nebraska and aren't being paid very much, and this seems like a good deal for you.
Yeah, well, no, it's a good deal, but I'm just thinking out loud. People are looking for a lifestyle change. It seems usually you've made up your mind you're going to go to wherever you're going for your lifestyle change, and you'd probably take a cut in pay, so this would be great icing on the cake, but would it attract somebody? I don't know.
Did they do any studies, Randy, or when they presented, did they look, you know, give any sort of examples of...
They said that there are some forces in California that offer similar hiring incentives, and I think they tried something like this before, but it was less money, and it didn't have much effect. So, you know, we'll have to see.
Yeah, I guess we will.
Yeah.
That starts January 1.
Uh-huh.
And yep. They're down, I think, 6 to 7 positions.
Wow.
Right. They said 3 or 4 patrol positions and then 3 jailers.
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to inspire other businesses to maybe think about how dire the situation has become, wages versus cost of living here,
right,
going through the roof. I'm hearing of an exodus of people now. Carbondale moving out to Newcastle.
Right.
We're seeing that farther and farther away. And are we ever going to have a tipping point, or is this just such an attractive area that people will come regardless?
And just try to make it happen. Meanwhile, there's another development proposal in the Elgibel area that has been recommended for denial. So mm-hmm. Here we are with a housing shortage crisis and zero vacancy rate for any sort of housing on the free market or subsidized. And I guess it's just not palatable down there.
It's just very difficult to get any single development approved. And, you know, the Mid-Valley has a development plan that, that these developers believe that they are following, and then when it comes time to get an individual proposal approved, there are flaws, there are criticisms of it. And certainly in that El Jebel area, which I think is, if you think about attractive places to live, I mean, you're close to Willits, you're close to a grocery store, you're close to Rafta Stop, but one of the concerns about multifamily or dense housing there is you're adding traffic to Highway 82 at what is already its busiest point. And it's pretty easy for a board to be concerned about that.
Well, it's kind of funny, though. I mean, we're talking about Eagle County is running that show over there, right? So what do they really care about traffic on Highway 82 or employee housing or an employee right. shortage in Aspen? So that's kind of a weird dynamic going on there. I don't know really what's important to them when they look at that little corner of their county that nobody really has to deal with.
However, the Planning Commission, I think it's a citizen board. The residents, I do believe, live in the Roaring Fork Valley. But then it does get kicked over on the other side of the canyon to the county commissioners for approval.
Yeah. And so, maybe they just nod to the Planning Commission over on this side and say whatever you want. I don't know. I don't know.
We'll learn about that pretty soon with the tree farm development, what the Eagle County commissioners decide to do with it.
Right. And so speaking of, Randy, when you said it's very difficult to get any development approved, I just have to go straight to Sonoma Village. It's
not so hard.
It's not hard to get approved. It's hard to get built.
I mean, it's something. So after 15 years...
Actually, 16 years. 16. I always mark the date because I was 4 days from having a baby, and I was this enormous person trying to fit into a booth. Bill Kane said, oh, let's have lunch. And then he sprung upon me. Carolyn, you were at Snowmass Sun at the same time on December 11th, 1999. Oh, we're going to buy this parcel, and we're going to develop this great base area. Well, my daughter had her 16th birthday a few days ago, and here we are.
Here we are.
This 35% finished project. We have a commitment from the middle developer. Oh, I'm going to see this through. We'll see. I was accused of being naive the other day when I said, well, Related's really going to bring it home this time.
Well, that's what they said.
That
press release when East West pulled out.
Which was last week.
Yes. Yeah, and the next day, Related comes out and said, oh, we're so excited. We're really going to get things going. We're so happy. You know when East West packed up and left, that just curdled their eggnog.
Nice seasonal reference.
Right? Yeah.
I mean,
I don't believe it. I don't think anything's happening in 2016. Maybe a roundabout.
Oh, they'll do the roundabout.
They'll do the roundabout because they have to, but... Mm-hmm.
Do they have enough money to do this? Why they were trying to sell it to East West?
I think Related has plenty of money, mm-hmm. but I think they look at this little project as just the rotten egg in the basket. I don't think they want to put any more money into this. Yeah, they don't.
Thorn in their side.
They have no will to finish this thing.
So that's your prediction?
That's my prediction.
Unbuilt.
Well, it'll be built, but my prediction is it will not be built until Aspen Ski Company comes in and buys it for 25 cents on the dollar.
Ski Company is the one that sold it in the first place, and now they want to back out of their hotel.
Yeah. They don't have confidence in the plan.
So,
how ironic is that?
Yeah, please describe for our listeners what occurred at last Monday's town council meeting in regards to what the CEO of SkiCo was saying to town council.
Well, he was blaming council and Related. He didn't say Related by name, but that he's mad at the town for the 14 months. He had asked for an expedited review, and they took their time, which, as they well should. There were too many loose ends, and there are still too many loose ends in my eye for it to get a final approval last 3 days.
Oh, I agree. I think recently. They went too quickly, as it is.
Well, how many appeared to be leaning the other way. And then there was sort of a sea change in the middle of the meeting.
But nothing really changed in the discussion. People just changed their minds. There wasn't any new evidence or new promises or commitments.
I think Mike Kaplan giving him his impassioned plea at the beginning of the meeting did hit home with a lot of people. They really did. You know, Tom Good, who I thought would have voted against it, he said he was very much conflicted. But in the end, it's like, I don't want to lose Ski Company. You might anyway. And we've You know, here you've rubber stamped, or you haven't rubber stamped, because I have to give the town staff a big hoo-ha for applause for how they have worked their tails off in every. They're trying to really protect the town, and I've said this before, but council.
Well, I've said it too. We have nothing to lose at this point.
Right.
I mean, 16.
Just build it. Who cares? Yeah.
No, or don't build it. Don't do anything with it. Whatever you want to do, but let's do it the way we want to do it. We're all used to it. Nobody's living is dependent on finishing this thing after 16 years. We're living our lives in Snowmass Village. We're just fine either way. So why are we making any concessions at this point?
Especially when there's the thought of these 117 or 125-foot buildings. I think we forgot.
Oh, my gosh.
And they didn't start out that large.
No,
there's been this incremental creep. I was going back and I was trying to compare. I finally just gave up because the height matrix was wrong. There were errors in it, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to publish that in the paper. But the fact of the matter is what was entitled was smaller in size
and
height.
So what did they approve? What is Base Village?
Nobody knows.
This is so Snowmass.
Well, it's almost 1.1 million feet of development. It's 1,092,000 feet.
And that's 90,000 more than the original.
75,000 more.
75,000. That's about three Walmarts.
Well, it's three art museums.
Yeah, so it's not a tiny little tweak in the plan. It's significant.
Yes, and
I have to just, I'm going to keep that silence in. How many public hearings did they have on this particular plan?
The final plan, they had three in December. And just a handful of public showed up. I think a lot of people thought that the 21st meeting would be broadcast on TV, and it wasn't. It was just on Granicus, so I think people were at home kind of stewing about that a little bit.
Okay.
But there were letters sent in. There's been plenty of feedback.
What are you hearing out there from your fellow residents and what you're seeing in letters to the editor?
I wrote a column, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, and it was just what I just the sentiment I just tried to express was, who cares? We don't care. We don't need to rush this thing.
Right.
And I got great feedback from local people on that said, yeah, that's exactly what we need to do. Nothing. They need to come to us, give us community benefits that actually benefit the community, and we don't need to bend over backwards for them anymore, because we've done that for 16 years, and we've got nothing.
Well, it was interesting at the end of the meeting, too, that Tom Good was able to extract another $200,000 from the developer. It was a very last-minute thing. When they were talking about Building 7, the entry building, that's one of the ones that's going to go higher, about 5 feet higher. And he said, well, we just can't give this to you with nothing in return. And so Tom really hammered that home. At the last second, Andrew Dan said, okay, we'll agree to the $200,000.
So that's what airspace costs?
In airspace, yeah, supposedly. No, it should be probably more.
Right.
When you think about the additional, what can be made, 2,000 square feet.
Well, what's the town going to do with $200,000? I mean, as a concession, I'm talking about. Not much.
Well, maybe put it towards the plaza, or put it towards Building 6, which is going to cost a lot to finish. They were given an unfinished shell of a building, which I think is great. They can turn around and sell that, but that's going to take money.
How many residents live in Snowmass?
What is it, about 1,700?
Yeah, and you know what it's
interesting? Divide that by 200,000.
But you know, Snowmass.
How you're talking?
Snowmass's population over a decade doubled, which I think is significant. And you think of those impacts, because it was 1,000. Carolyn, when you were the publisher of the Snowmass Sun, remember it was about 1,000 people. And when I looked at the 2013 census, it was almost 2,000.
Well, and that's interesting too, because they told us when they first came out with the Base Village plan that we needed this for the survival of Snowmass Ski Area, for the survival of the town. And we have a half-finished Base Village, which is worse than no Base Village at all, in my opinion. But Snowmass Ski Area continues to set records, and as you just said, the town's population doubled. It's a great place to live.
It's a great mountain.
It's a great mountain.
And, you know, the ski company has put millions of dollars into its mountain.
They told us it was no longer about skiing. It was about these Base Villages. That's how you stay competitive. That's how you stay in the game. And, you know, now we all know that was nonsense.
Prior to 99, they were saying, we're not getting in the real estate business.
Right. Well, they also said, oh, you know, hotels can't make it on their own. And you know, then we just have a hotel that has just opened in Elgibel, and then we had the Westin was bought by, and mm-hmm. I don't know how that's doing, quite honestly. I've heard mixed reviews. I don't know how it's doing business-wise. Hopefully it's full for the holidays.
Probably for the
Holiday Inn, too.
Do you think that the Limelight's going to get built based on Mike Kaplan's comments on Monday night?
Well, you know, it's interesting. He made those comments before the vote, so maybe he would have had a different view if he'd have seen it. The vote go that way. I don't know. You know, it was such a confusing evening, topping off a very confusing month. And I think Markey nailed it on the head when she talked about how it's just been incredibly emotionally draining and tough. And the council felt beat up. And I know the town feels beat up, too. I think everybody right. who doesn't feel beat up, it's probably related. They're probably like, well, this is just business as usual. That's right. All I can think.
I'll take him at his word. I don't think he has confidence in Bass Village being finished anytime soon. And if that's true, it really probably wouldn't make any sense to build that hotel right now. So I don't think he was blowing smoke there. But it's ironic though that that's their plan and they have no confidence in it. So come on.
Well, right. And if the costs have gone up $10 million, I was looking, Don Schuster had a copy of the Idaho Mountain Express, and it talked about the Limelight, which is nearing completion up in Ketchum, which has always been the joke. Yes, before the shovel of dirt happens in Snowmass and the Limelight, the Ketchum will be done, and it will. That, I think it said in the paper, it was 58 or 64 million. That's a lot less money than it's going to take to develop this sucker, which is probably at 110 million, I'd say.
I had questions following what Mike said on Monday night, and so I asked for access, you know, which apparently that's what you have to do. Even though I do have a cell phone number, I could call him directly, but I was going through the proper motions.
I called him directly, and he didn't answer. So
I got denied because he doesn't feel comfortable. He read off of a statement on Monday night, and he doesn't feel comfortable answering any other questions.
If you can't go off script, what...
What does that tell you?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's under an enormous amount of pressure from ownership, obviously.
And they're here, I'm sure.
Yes, yes.
And he has to have dinner with them, you know.
You know, as a president, Mike, compared to, you know, Pat O'Donnell or Bob Maynard, is pretty open, I would say.
He is, except for now.
Well, these are some tough times.
Except on stuff that matters.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's like East-West, the whole thing, too.
That, you know, I wanted to ask him, really, $10 million has gone up in 1 year? Can you please talk a little bit about what that is? And do you still feel the same way now that there's been a yes vote? And, you know, let's talk about when you were first at the table.
Yeah.
I think the public wants to hear that. You know, it's not just whatever he wants to say. It's what people want to know, too.
Right.
So just give me a call anytime, Mike, 920-9000.
But, you know, back to the Limelight question, will it be built? I'd say 50-50. That's what Don Schuster had said a month ago, and that's what I would put it at. I can't see them completely walking away from a project, but maybe.
I don't think they'll completely walk away, but they'll want to see progress.
Yeah.
It's a significant progress, not a new roundabout or a statue in the plaza or something like that.
Right. I thought it's good that the council shifted their priorities from a second phase of the Viceroy down to 7 and 8. Those two buildings right at the entrance, mm-hmm. The faux front, as mm-hmm. I like to call them, those need to be fixed up.
Oh, absolutely.
It's got to be something.
The rebar sticking out of the top.
And oh.
It looks kind of third world.
Well, maybe they could paint something on there.
Put have like Christmas decorations on
Keith Haring drawings or some kind of cool
something,
designs.
Yeah.
Randy, you guys got a new Garfield County manager.
Yeah, he was the deputy county manager and has a lot of experience, Kevin Batchelder. He stepped in as the acting county manager when... the personality conflict, as they put it, developed with Drew Gorgue, and they were comfortable with him. So they went through a national search. They conducted it through their own human resources department. So they didn't pay an outside search firm and had two outsiders in and chose the in-house guy. I think what that just represents is that John Martin... and presumably the other commissioners, but, you know, I think that the conflict with Drew Gorgue was primarily with John Martin, that John is comfortable with the in-house guy. And I see no reason to think that he's not very competent and very well-versed in the issues.
You also had an article about somebody from the Drug Task Force warning people about the lackadaisical attitude we have toward consuming marijuana.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's a former Trident officer who's on the Garfield County Sheriff's Force. Spoke to the Friday Rotary Club here, and we went and covered it. Initially, the speaker was supposed to be the sheriff, and we wanted to see him speak. Turned out to be this deputy, and yeah, we wrote it anyway. It was a little bit like Reefer Madness all over again. Marijuana is a gateway drug, and you know, it's really a shame. This deputy said that we can't bust people who are growing their own plants because they're protected under medical marijuana provisions. And we basically did a speech story over a weekend and posted it and got a firestorm of comments from marijuana defenders who reacted as harshly to that story as just about anything that we have done for a while. In some ways, you know, and I've been here a little over a year and a half now, and at first I was kind of surprised by how calm everybody was about legal marijuana, how it didn't really seem to be a big deal. And then as it has gone on, you know, the opponents of legalized marijuana are out there, not just in law enforcement, and they are vocal, and Oh, I'll get in trouble for saying this. It's almost like an attack on marijuana is an attack on guns. You know, you can't say anything in America negative about guns without being jumped on, and marijuana certainly has its strong defenders here. It was really interesting
Colorado.
To watch it play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's reflective mm-hmm. of the yeah. of our culture. Our vote.
And
yeah,
I do right. think the deputy, it was like being in health class in seventh grade back in the early 70s.
Well, it is interesting that the sheriffs that have taken this position throughout the state, didn't they, with guns, they were very pro-guns, I think, that with some lawmakers, didn't...
Yeah, something? The yeah. sheriff the is, sheriff's, yeah. opposed Hickenlooper's
right. Hickenlooper,
legislation after the Aurora theater shooting.
Right.
A lot of police chiefs, on the other hand, or the police chiefs' organizations, tend to be in favor of some gun restrictions, some ammunition restrictions.
I think with marijuana, have we seen definitive studies that it is a gateway drug, is not a gateway drug? You know, I think that this will come to light in the next couple of years, but is it affecting kids negatively having it?
You know, is it easier to get pot? The authoritative studies on marijuana, I think, are the studies that show that relatively heavy use by adolescents does lower IQ, and I think there's a Harvard yeah. study.
That, well, as does alcohol.
My mom says
the
that.
Frontal lobe.
Certainly.
Yeah.
It's bad for kids to use drugs. This
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would just jump in on that. You know, it's if marijuana use was legal everywhere, I think it would be a lot less dangerous for our kids in Colorado. Being the place where it's legal, I think it gets hugely glamorized here.
Mm-hmm.
And kids embrace that. It almost becomes part of your identity in Colorado to be part of the pot culture. And so I think it's probably a bigger risk for kids here because we are the only ones doing it. If like I said, if it was legal everywhere, I think it would be a lot more akin to alcohol, where it's there, okay, big deal, and we wouldn't get the marijuana tourism. I think we just saw, was it, one of our local tourist groups said that they're seeing an increase in polls where people are coming here just because pot is legal.
Yeah, if you're going to make a decision on a ski vacation, you go into Park City or you come in here.
Yeah.
So. Well, Park City does have that new gondola linking Park City over to Park West or Canyons or whatever. I'm anxious to get out there and see it,
you
actually.
You can barely get mm-hmm. a drink there anyway.
You know, I'm not much of a drinker, so yeah. I'd like to see this as a model for, you know, linking Highlands to Aspen Mountain. I'd love to see, you know, as we digress into another subject
yes.
that I think
yeah,
that
it was, how do we get from pot to gun tolas?
Well,
oh, there's a natural link there.
Yeah, that's right.
And what about the Forest Service approving 1A?
Oh,
so here we are.
Here we
like
are.
There's something concrete to your reporting from when it was just poo-poo. Mm-hmm. We're not doing all that.
I know. People tried to discredit me when this whole issue came up, but I held strong because I knew the truth on this.
Right.
Let me just say that I'll be interested to see. Ski Company has a lot coming at them from a lot of different ways. There's going to be pressure to build that lift. I can't see that Gorsuch House approval coming in the next 6 months or whatever. So will they commit to build that lift before the World Cup finals? We'll see without a firm approval. And how much pressure will there be on the town, the city, to approve Gorsuch House? I don't know if you were at the meeting when Gorsuch House, they did their big public unveiling at Limelight. And
we did a story this past week.
I saw that, Marcy's last story.
Yep.
A lot of people who I know were opposed to Base 2 are in favor of this hotel.
Mm-hmm. I have experienced the same thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it just shows that it's not people are necessarily anti-growth. They just want the right product, and mm-hmm. they don't want and you know, Gorsuch House, they're not asking for any housing exemptions or parking. They're going to do it as to code. So that's a note to developers out there.
Well, yeah, as weird as it sounds, they really sound like they're doing the right thing.
But should this be such a revelation? Shouldn't we all play by the rules like this?
No, I hope this is the example now.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. Local guys.
Local guys.
That's part of it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
They
get it.
Right.
But Jim DeFrancia knows. I mean, he's seen what's going on down in Basalt with the blowback there.
With the petition for the Pan and Fork to just have the town completely own it.
Yes.
And not have any private development involved at all.
I don't know if that's fiscally reasonable or... But
right. Well, if they're going to give half their sales tax away anyway, they're not going to afford it.
Don't you think we're seeing a sea change of how people are looking at developers, though? It's more like...
Right, and it's like what Randy said. You can't get a development past at least mid-valley in that congested area already. It's, mm-hmm. it's the same thing as the Aspen scene.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you for taking the time, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.